All right, Matt, I learned this. Did you know that when you drive through Louisiana, the swamps go right by you?
Did you make that up on the road?
No, Ashley told me. I don't know where she got it.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales.
All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
Dude, I'm doing all right.
Good. Good. You saying on the road, I just had to tell everybody, before I was a little rusty because, we had taken some time off and not recorded. Tonight, I might be a little rusty because my mind isn't here. I traveled for a funeral and I drove to Tennessee on Monday, had the funeral Tuesday and drove back on Wednesday. So I am tired.
Adam and I usually talk. I've said it before. I talk to Adam sometimes more than I do Amanda.
Yeah.
And we've gone like 3 days with maybe like a handful of texts exchanged because he's been driving so much.
Yeah.
I don't know how he does it. I can't do it. I cannot. If I'm going anywhere and it's more than 8 hours, if I can't fly there, I'm not going. I mean, that's just how it is.
Yeah. I honestly don't know how I did it either. It was.
And yeah, you did it back to back almost.
Yep. So I might be a little loopy tonight. So if I am, y'all forgive me. But we want to say, before we get too far into it, go over and check out patreon.com/graveyardtales. You can sign up to become a patron. You can sign up for any of the three levels we got, or you can, if you're watching the video, there is a little QR code right up here. You can scan and it'll take you right to our Patreon. And if you just watch that, you'll see how difficult it is to point at stuff on your own screen. cause it feels backwards and which hand is it? Do I do this? There we go. There we go.
You gotta practice it.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I see these YouTube videos of people doing it. Hey, smash that like button. And it's like, it's right here.
Yeah. I'm going to have to sit and work on that just on my own. When I'm up here editing or researching, I'll just have the video on and start going, see if I can point to it. But sign up for one of our three levels. We've got a one, a five, or a $10 level. All the levels get a weekly bonus episode, which we're recording tonight to go up next week. And then if you move up to the $5 level, you get the bonus episode. Plus, if we have an ad, you get the ad-free audio and video version of that episode. Then if you move up to the $10, you get all of that. Plus, you get our second show. I almost said new show. It's not new. Our second show, Side Quest, which is completely different format than Graveyard Tales. It's less edited and it's less serious. If you thought anything could be less serious than Graveyard Tales, it can be. It's Side Quest.
It sure can.
We either play games on there. We've eaten some nasty jelly beans, drank some weird sodas. We've had guests on. Probably have more guests on in the future. Mm-hmm. I like to tell Matt survival stories, not of myself and driving back-to-back days.
Right. Yeah.
But people that have really survived something. Matt likes to play trivia. So it's fun. It's like if you were hanging out with me and Matt and just kind of sitting in the corner listening to me and Matt jaw jack for an hour.
Yeah. And hey, we've got a really cool one tonight, and it's really funny, and I haven't told Adam anything about it, but nope. It's pretty funny. So if you haven't pulled the trigger yet, I promise It's a lot of fun. You'll enjoy it.
Yep. Yep. So go over there, patreon.com/graveyardtales, or click that QR code. Oh, I almost got it. Click the QR code up above me, and go over to Patreon. Also, if we have a sponsor, check out our sponsor. It really helps us if you use their vanity code that I've got in the show notes and our special code. It'll get you a discount on something cool, and it lets them know that you heard about it from Graveyard Tales, and they'll come back. So, on that note, Matt, why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
All right. So, tonight, we are headed down to Louisiana. Because, of course, we are.
Of course.
Adam's joke led into it.
It
was so apropos.
Topical.
Adam, you know, if you're going to talk to ghosts, you pretty much have to go to Louisiana at some point.
I would think so, yeah.
I mean, it really feels like the entire state collectively decided, you know what? Let's make everything haunted.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and tucked away, and I'm going to mispronounce it. It's Rapides Parish. I've pronounced it about a dozen ways, so I apologize. I realize that stuff in Louisiana is not always pronounced how it's spelled.
Yeah. Could be Rapido.
Yeah, but
who knows?
Could be. But near the little town of Cheneyville, I'm pretty sure I'm pronouncing that right.
Yep.
Sits a place that doesn't always get the same attention as places like Myrtle's Plantation, which if you've researched haunted places, you've heard of the Myrtle's Plantation.
Oh, yeah.
But honestly, it probably should. We're talking about Lloyd Hall Plantation.
Yep.
And, you know, this place isn't just haunted. It's like haunted overachieving. Okay?
No, it's not just haunted. It's haunted.
Yeah. It doesn't just have one ghost. It has a full paranormal staff meeting. I mean, a plantation owner who died on his own property. Violently.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a violin playing ghost soldier who won't stop practicing, heartbroken brides, a poisoned nanny. I mean, come on. And The list goes on and on. So yeah, this place didn't just become haunted. It was made to be haunted.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're going to get into the history because you got to hear the history of this place to understand why it is so freaking haunted. So, yep. Adam, tell us the history of the Lloyd Hall Plantation.
All right. So, as we always say, go check our sources down at the bottom of the show notes. You can find where we found all the information. Everything we talk about is sourced and referenced down below. If you just scroll down, you can find where we found all of it. So, firstly, I couldn't confirm if there were any indigenous use, occupation, or indigenous village in the immediate area where Lloyd Hall sits, but the Choctaw were in the broader area. But I couldn't verify anything specific about where Lloyd Hall sits. Did a village sit right there? But we can assume it was used because the Choctaw were in the area. The land beneath Lloyd Hall Plantation has a longer history than the house itself, and for generations before the mansion rose there, the area around Cheneyville was already being shaped by settlement, transport, and plantation expansion. In the early 1800s, this part of central Louisiana was becoming part of the, quote, old Cheneyville landscape. It was a corridor where settlers moved in, planted large tracts, and used the nearby bayou system to move goods toward Washington and New Orleans. Now, before Lloyd Hall became a name attached to the property, the land was part of the wider plantation frontier that spread through the region after the Louisiana Purchase. One National Register document says the plantation was known to have been part of the estate of Levi Wells, who died in 1818, and that his son Montfort Wells, there's a name for you,
Montfort.
if you're a new parent looking for a name for your kid, Montfort is available.
That's right. For good reason.
Montfort claimed it in 1829. So that suggests that the land was already being organized as productive estate land before the Lloyd family arrived, likely fitting into the first wave of American-era plantation development in central Louisiana. Now, by around 1820, the Lloyd brothers from Marshall County, Tennessee, did you know they were from your area, Matt?
No, I actually didn't know that.
Well, there you go. They were from Marshall County, Tennessee. They were said to be arriving in central Louisiana, and William Lloyd eventually built the house that would give the plantation its long-term identity. The land around it was not wilderness in the romantic sense. It was a working, contested agricultural zone where ownership, clearing, drainage, labor, and transport all had to be established and maintained. In that world, the plantation's value came from the land itself, its fertile soil, its access to waterways, and its ability to support labor-intensive crops. So this was a place that you didn't move in to a ready-made farm, basically. You moved in to, oh, this is swamp. Now I've got to make it into...
Yeah, you had to turn it into a farm. Right. I can only imagine that turning swampland into a farm was no easy task.
Probably not. Probably.
I mean, I don't know. I'm no farmer, and I've never lived in a swamp, but it just sounds like it would be difficult.
But he stayed at a Holiday Inn Express once. I have been to Louisiana a few times, and I try not to go into the swamps because of the critters that are in the swamps. So... And by critters, those can be humans, too.
Yeah.
Because there are some interesting people that live in the swamps of Louisiana. So Lloyd Hall was built around 1820 during the early decades of Louisiana's plantation era when the rich river and bayou lands of central Louisiana were being developed for agriculture. The house was built by William Lloyd, who is often described in local tradition as an English immigrant connected to the Lloyd family of London. Though that family story is part of the plantation's lore rather than something firmly proven in the historical record.
Wait a minute. That wouldn't be like the Lloyds of London.
It would be.
Really?
Yep.
Huh.
But they can't prove that. So
okay.
I think my personal thought is because his name was Lloyd and he knew that us Americans are dumb when it comes to English stuff. We wouldn't look it up. And they didn't have the internet back then, so they couldn't prove him wrong within 10 minutes. So he just started telling people he was from the Lloyds of London family.
It's possible. I don't want to step on anything that you talk about, but that was one thing that he kind of hacked his family off, is he dropped the second L.
Mm, yeah.
And, I remember reading that. That was... The older generations of Lloyds thought that was blasphemy that he would take the extra L, like Lloyds of London with the double L.
Yep. Well, and the whole time we were talking about this before we did it, before I looked it up, I thought it was L-L-O-Y-D.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But when
I probably sent it to you like that.
When I put it in, I was like, wait a minute, there's only one L. Is this, what's wrong with this?
Yeah.
But yeah, that could be, I mean, he could be of the Lloyds of London and changed his name so there wasn't any, like you couldn't say, oh, well, he's part of the Lloyds of London family and use that against him or something. I don't know. But
he went around singing, ooh. We're the Lloyds of London.
There you go. I was wondering where that was going with singing, but I like that. I like that. Now, the plantation took shape as a working agricultural property, and over time it became associated with crops such as tobacco, corn, indigo, and sugarcane. Now, Matt, do you know what indigo is? I looked this up.
I just figured the only thing I can think of is the dye.
Okay.
Is that right?
They grow bottles of dye. Yes. No. Indigo is a tropical legume, and it's a historically significant shrub that was used to produce a natural blue dye.
Okay. Okay.
Known for its vibrant color. It was cultivated for thousands of years. It's used for textile coloring, notably denim, and in traditional medicine. So,
so it's like it's a bean of some sort. Yeah. Okay.
And it's blue, and then they crush it and somehow make it into a dye that can dye a lot of stuff.
Do you think that they figured that out when they were out hand picking all this indigo, and everybody come in and their hands are all blue?
Oh yeah, I'm
they
sure.
Were like, oh, this bean turns your hands blue. Wonder if it will turn some clothes blue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure it was something like that. They sitting down in the field one day and it was growing wild and they just started picking at it and they're like, wait a minute, I'm caught blue handed here. I got stuff all over me. Now, like many Louisiana plantations, its wealth depended on enslaved labor. And one source states that about 60 enslaved people worked the land. Now,
that sounds like a lot. I don't know if it is compared. I'm not up on how many plantations would have slave labor, but that sounds like a lot.
I think a lot of times when we've looked into like Myrtles and stuff, they would have over 100.
Okay.
So it's not as many as a lot of plantations are, but. Now, on Lloyd Hall, the years as a working farm were years of order, exhaustion, and constant motion. The plantation was not a quiet country estate so much as a living agricultural machine, and its fields, laborers, livestock, storage spaces, and house all existed to keep the machine running. At the center of that world stood William Lloyd's house, built around 1820, and while beyond it stretched hundreds of acres of working land that were said to cover more than 600 acres and were worked by 60 enslaved people. The plantation, like I said, it produced tobacco, corn, indigo, and sugar cane crops, and it demanded different kinds of labor through the year. So tied to Lloyd Hall and to the broader plantation economy of Louisiana, it made sure it kept running, but to do that, you had to switch your crop depending on the time of year. So you then had to have different skills for working those crops. In the warm, wet climate of central Louisiana, the land could be productive, but only through relentless work, clearing, planting, weeding, hauling, processing, and maintaining the fields, fences, roads, and drainage that made cultivation possible. So in Louisiana, it stays warmer a lot longer than other states. So the growing season is longer. But that also means that other things grow that you don't want to grow.
Mm-hmm.
So you think weeding a garden in Texas or Tennessee is bad. You in Louisiana, you plant a garden, you go in and eat lunch, you come back, and you've got a forest already started in your garden. So it takes a lot of weeding to keep just the crop you want growing.
Yeah, and, you know, especially in that moisture.
Yep.
You know, I'm sure you had to, in that humidity, you had to deal with stuff's going to mold really fast. Oh, yeah. I mean, you had to stay on top of that stuff.
Yep, you can't let it sit on the plant for long or it'll go bad. So it was constant motion at Lloyd Hall. And the daily rhythm of the plantation would have changed with the season, but it was never truly idle. In the sugar months, the labor was especially punishing. Cane had to be planted, weeded, cut, hauled, and processed under the pressure of weather and time. On large Louisiana plantations, enslaved laborers often worked in organized gangs with different crews performing successive tasks in the field and around the estate, while skilled workers handled carpentry, blacksmithing, coopering, and other necessary trades. The work was physically brutal, and the system was built on coercion, surveillance, and punishment, with only meager food, clothing, and time for private family life. Lloyd Hall itself was part of that labor system. The house was the planter's center of command, but it also depended on the labor of cooks, house workers, field hands, drivers, and artisans who kept the family fed, the grounds maintained, and the plantation operational. Like many Louisiana plantations, it would have included cabins or quarters for the enslaved families, work yards, barns, storage buildings, and the agricultural infrastructure needed to move crops from field to market. One account even notes that mules pulled flatboats filled with cotton bales up a nearby bayou for shipment to New Orleans, showing how closely the plantation's interior labor connected to the river transport and trade. Now, the conditions were harsh not only because of the work itself, but because plantation life left little room for rest, privacy, or security. Everybody there received their limited rations and clothing, and they were expected to supplement their food through gardens, hunting, and fishing. And then they lived under constant threat just of the enslaved life. But think about that, Matt. They're running the crops for the plantation, and then they've got to supplement their food by growing their own crops.
Yeah. They spend all stinking daylight to dark, you know, working the plantation, and then they've got to go home or go to their quarters and work their own food.
Yep, exactly.
God.
It's crazy. Now, when the Civil War broke out, the war's movement through Louisiana made properties like Lloyd Hall vulnerable, valuable, and dangerous all at once. The Cheneyville area was not isolated from conflict. Union forces operating in West and Central Louisiana moved through the region in 1863, and contemporary battle records list actions near Cheneyville on May 18th and May 20th, along with fighting at Plains Store on May 21st during the campaign toward Port Hudson. In that atmosphere, a plantation house such as Lloyd Hall would have been exposed to troop movements, requisitioning, occupation, fear, and the constant pressure of choosing a side or pretending not to choose one. So the story most often told about William Lloyd is that he tried to survive the war by dealing with both armies. So according to the tradition that has followed the plantation for generations, he allowed Confederate and Union soldiers both to camp on the property at different times, hoping to keep the plantation safe no matter which army prevailed. Now, in one telling, he was not a committed partisan at all, but a practical landowner trying to protect his family, his house, and his land from the destruction that often followed Civil War armies. The strategy, if it happened as the legend claims, eventually backfired, because the best known version says Lloyd was discovered playing both sides, and he was punished in 1864 by Union troops. And Matt, this is the only time I've heard this. I know it happened, but this is the only time I've heard it in our notes, in our research. The Union troops tarred and feathered him before hanging him in front of his house. Other retellings shift the blame toward Confederates, or describe him more generally as being executed for treason or exposed as a double spy, whatever. But the constant is that his house turned into his execution site.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but tarring and feathering, it's not funny, but it makes me laugh. Probably because it was in movies and it wasn't a deadly thing in movies, but really tarring and feathering could kill a man itself if they couldn't get the tar off.
Well, I kind of thought that too. I was like, is this, I wondered if it was more of a humiliation thing.
Yeah, it's supposed to be.
It's not, this is not necessarily physical torture. Although that tar to be enough to pour on somebody is going to be hot.
Yep.
So there is going to be some physical pain associated with it. The feathers, I don't know why. The
feathers, it's just humiliation.
Humiliation, yeah.
Yep. But I've heard with the tarring and feathering, if somebody were tarred and feathered and then they couldn't get it cleaned off, like they were, I don't know, tarred and feathered and then stuck in a room,
mm-hmm.
that the tar would... Like your skin is an organ, so mm-hmm. it breathes mm-hmm. and all that stuff. It would stop your skin from doing that, and then you would eventually get sick and die.
Yeah, it would, your skin would just decay.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So if it were not wiped off, then it could kill you. But it is, like you said, mainly for humiliation, because they were going to... Either A, let you go, and then you go wash it off and be fine, or B, hang you, and it wouldn't matter. But movies ruined tarring and feathering for me.
Yeah.
And it's not as serious in my brain as it should be. Because I think of tarring and feathering, and then I think of like Looney Tunes.
Right.
Where they get tarred and feathered, and then, you know, Porky Pig is running around. Looking like a chicken right. or something. Now, like I said, whether every detail of that story is historically provable or not, it reflects something real about the plantation Civil War era. The war did not pass Lloyd Hall in a distant, abstract way. The house sat in a region touched by military campaigns, and the plantation was part of a landscape where armies foraged, locals hedged their loyalties, and civilians trying to survive whatever the next column of soldiers might bring. That's likely why the Lloyd Hall story survives so powerfully, because it captures the danger of being caught between armies in a contested southern war zone. In the years after the war, the plantation's Civil War memory hardened into legend. The idea of William Lloyd as a double agent became one of the defining explanations for the house's haunted reputation that Matt will talk about, and the Civil War death story became inseparable from the property's identity. Now, after the Lloyd era, the plantation passed through many hands. One source says there were more than 24 owners over the years, while another says there were at least 20 after the original family. So that long chain of ownership reflects a common pattern for old southern plantations after the Civil War, when economic change, inheritance issues, and changing land often broke up original family control. By the 1930s, the property had reached a new turning point. In 1934, Mary Raxdale bought Lloyd Hall, and her brother John Clarence Raxdale Sr. supervised renovation work on the house. After Mary's death in 1946, the plantation was sold to the Fitzgerald family. So the Fitzgerald family became closely associated with the plantation's preservation and modern identity. A PBS segment and other accounts describe the site as having entered a period of renewal under the Fitzgeralds, who kept it as a working farm while also restoring the house and eventually operating as a bed and breakfast. So that continuity is one of the most unusual parts of the Lloyd Hall story. Despite all the changes in ownership, the land never stopped being agricultural. The house remained tied to farming life rather than becoming just a museum. And today, Lloyd Hall is described as a 640-acre working farm and historic lodging property listed on the National Register of Historic Places.
Yeah, so you can tell with all the stuff, not just what happened to William Lloyd, we're gonna get into that, but the fact that both armies of the Civil War came through there, so there's a lot of emotion, war, death, things that are gonna leave a lasting mark on the land, wetland.
Yeah.
And all that water and everything, it just tends to hold on to all of that negative energy. But let's start with William Lloyd. Okay. People that stay at the Lloyd Hall plantation, and yes, you can actually stay there. As Adam said, bed and breakfast style.
Might be fun.
Apparently there's people that just enjoy, like Adam, enjoy fear on their vacation. Okay. You know, every time they go on a trip, he comes back. We went to this, you know, haunted moonshine steel, you know.
Yeah.
But people say that William Lloyd is very much still around the plantation. Guests that stay there talk about feeling someone brush past them, the sensation that someone is standing right behind them, feeling someone breathing on their neck. Okay. I mean, you can walk by me, stand behind me, but breathe on my neck. Come on.
Yeah, that's too close.
Yeah. Hey, back off, big guy. This may work with the chicks, but not with me.
Yeah.
And personal items going missing and then reappearing somewhere else. That we've heard of that stuff, you know, a lot. But honestly, if I feel someone breathing on my neck at a historic plantation at 2 a.m, I'm not going to investigate it. I'm not going to answer questions. I'm not going to talk to them. I'm just going to leave. Okay. Because that's creepy. I mean, that is too creepy.
It's too close, man.
Yeah.
Too close.
I'm not staying. This is no longer my room. This ghost can have this room.
I'll sleep in the hallway. I don't care.
There's also a recurring story from guests involving small personal belongings like rings and keys and watches that just vanish from a bedside table and later show up somewhere completely different in the room. So it's not like theft. It's missing. It was here last night, and then it's somewhere else, still inside the room. And that's not just terrifying, you know, it's rude, you know, because
frustrating for sure.
Yeah, it's like a ghost cat, you know, taking something or a ferret. You ever had a ferret? You know, they love shiny stuff.
And I had a buddy who had one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It also,
like you said, it's rude because we're getting to the age where we set something down and don't remember we set it there.
Yeah.
So then when we do remember we set it there, we go back and it's not there.
Yeah.
It's playing with our brains.
It's like I've had, before we started tonight, there was something weird that I noticed immediately when I got in here.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I would not have done.
Right.
Okay. I know I wouldn't have done it. I have no reason to have done it, but it was done nonetheless. Something of mine was plugged in somewhere else that it didn't belong. So what do I do? I accuse one of my children, like any good father does.
Right.
They all deny it. Amanda denies it. So I'm kind of like, I will not be able to confirm that I have paranormal activity in my home until all of my children are gone.
Then
it may be me doing it.
That's true. At that point, it might be you.
Now, this I know I did not do. But I have left stuff places and been like, man, if he picks up my thing again and then I find it where I must have left it in here.
Yeah, right now you could have a liar living with you.
Right.
And not a ghost, but we'll see.
Yeah.
In several years, we'll find out for sure. Was it a liar or was it a ghost?
Give me about 8 more years, then we'll know. All right. So the next spirit, and like I said, there's several of them. It is named Harry. Okay. He is the celebrity ghost of the house.
Is his last name Balzac?
I hope so. If it's not, it is now.
Yep.
But Harry is believed to have been a Union soldier, possibly a deserter, who hid in the attic during the Civil War. And according to legend, he didn't make it out. He was shot and killed there. So if he was a deserter and his own troops found him hiding out, then yeah, they killed him right then.
Yep.
Some stories say that he was discovered while hiding. Others say that he was betrayed. So if old Mr. Lloyd was kind of a double agent, which is iffy in the legend.
Yep.
He may have realized that he had this guy camped out in his attic and turned him over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or if his own troops were there and they found him and said, you know, what, you know, you're getting ready to desert us. You know, this is punishable by death, and took care of it right there. Either way, he died right there on the property, possibly in the house.
Yep.
Now, to make things even creepier, there is reportedly a blood stain on the third floor that never completely disappears.
I don't like that. I don't like that.
We have heard stories about this in other places.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This weird blood stain usually it's on the hardwood floor.
And yeah.
This is on floor as well. I've seen stories that it's like a rug or something. They clean it. And then days later it's back, or it'll get very faint, but then it will never fully be gone. And then over time it becomes, you know, it becomes obvious again.
The rug, if it was on a rug, just if you can't get rid of the rug because it's historical, mm-hmm. roll it up and stick it away.
Yeah,
and
right.
Not deal with that rug anymore. But if it's on the floor, get a rug.
Yeah.
Put a rug over
it. Well, and you know, it is creepy. But if you've ever had a house or an apartment and you had animals in it, you had the dogs and cats and stuff, and you clean your carpets. You bring in the real carpet cleaners that the wet yep. suck up the water and all that stuff. And man, they look awesome for about a week. And then some of those stains that are all the way down in there, they come back.
Start moving back up.
So
yeah.
This is not unheard of, but
right.
You would think if this is on hardwood, eventually you'd be able to get rid of it. And mm-hmm. that it wouldn't come back with a vengeance like this one apparently does. But Harry, he don't stop there. Harry performs.
Huh.
Guests and staff have reported hearing violin music late at night coming from upstairs. Not just vague, spooky noises, actual violin music, which is somehow worse.
Yeah.
Because again, if I'm staying at this plantation and I hear violin music coming from the attic at 2 a.m., I'm not investigating. I'm just packing. I'm like, what? You've got to be kidding me.
There's certain places that music should not be coming from.
That's right.
And violin music especially
uh-huh.
should not be coming from an attic.
Mm-hmm. Uh-uh.
The only thing worse is if it was a banjo up there.
Bagpipes, you know.
Yeah.
But you think there's no version of this explanation that is good, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If it's a staff member up there playing the violin, what in the world are you doing?
Right.
But if it's not, which you got to believe it's not, then, man. That's really, really creepy. Because otherwise, you've got a guy, a human, in your attic playing the violin. And
Which is almost as bad.
Yeah, we've always said, I am way more scared of the living than I am the dead.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But if you eliminate all of those possibilities, it's a ghost that practices the violin.
And is not terrible at it either, which is crazy.
Yeah. And one of the best firsthand stories comes from a couple who stayed overnight. They woke up in the middle of the night hearing faint violin music coming from upstairs. And they assumed maybe it was another guest. And maybe this other guest brought a violin to a haunted plantation, which already kind of sounds suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
So the next morning, they asked the staff something like, hey, who was playing the violin last night? And the response was, no one here plays the violin. And again, that's one of those uh-oh moments, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, well, I'm done.
Mm-hmm. Who was playing the violin last night so I can go yell at them because that's crazy.
Yeah.
And then find out it's, no, there was no human doing it.
Call the front desk and tell them whoever's playing this violin has got to knock it off. I need some sleep. Right. You know?
Right.
This ghost is over here trying to steal my watch. You know, I can't be dealing with the violin at this hour.
This is just too much. My watch has moved three times and now somebody's playing the violin. But I don't understand.
But what makes this particular story even creepier is that the staff wasn't even all that surprised. They weren't like, really? That's strange. It was more like, yeah, that happens. Which is worse. It happens more than once, you know. You didn't just book a bed and breakfast. You've got now a haunted subscription service. You know, you've got Ghost Spotify along with your bed and breakfast. Okay.
Right.
Now, there was a longtime housekeeper, and some reports say that this housekeeper worked there for over 40 years. And visitors would ask her, is this place haunted? And instead of denying it, she basically would say, of course it is. Like, not even, well, maybe, or some stuff. No, she would say, of course it is. Like, are you nuts?
Yeah.
Look at the history of this joint. Don't you know it's haunted?
Yep. you have to ask? Why are you asking?
That's right. So she would casually talk about footsteps upstairs, doors opening on their own, and the man upstairs, referring to Harry.
And it's a weird way to refer to him.
Yeah, right. But that's always a little bit creepier than someone just trying to sell some ghost stories, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Just telling you about what, you know, working there. Oh, yeah, well, there you hear footsteps upstairs, doors open and close. Oh, and then there's a guy that lives upstairs, a ghost that lives upstairs. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Oh, and he plays a violin. No kidding.
It's weird to me. That she would go, yeah, you know, the man upstairs, because people go, God?
Yeah, what, right.
Who are you talking about?
Yeah.
No, not Harry.
But the reports were her, this housekeeper, talking about this stuff. It was almost like she was talking about bad plumbing. You know, it's like it's just a part of it. It's an old house, you know.
Yeah.
The pipes make noise and the ghost plays the violin. You know, what are the haunted places you stay at like, you know?
Yeah, I mean... The plantation down the road has a screaming woman in white, so be glad you got violin guy.
Room 3 has weak water pressure, and the attic ghost practices on Thursday nights.
Mm-hmm. So book Friday to Wednesday.
But the confidence in telling stories like that would just absolutely shock guests. You can just imagine, you know, somebody that's been there for 40 years and seen all this stuff just going, as a matter of fact, you know, mm-hmm. this is life here. Now we need to talk about the third floor because every haunted location has got that spot, you know, and at Lloyd Hall, it's upstairs at the third floor. So people describe sudden cold spots, a heavy feeling in the air, and this overwhelming sensation that they are absolutely not alone. And multiple spirits seem tied to that place, which that's never comforting.
Did they get the feeling they're not alone because they heard a violin in their otherwise empty room?
Yeah, right, right.
I wouldn't feel alone then either.
That's exactly right. Because, you know, just one ghost, that's a haunting. Multiple ghosts, that's like a committee. You know, they're working together. To really make your stay terrifying.
It's like the TV show Ghosts, where you've got multiple ghosts in one house.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they all have I'm sorry. I just got a weird notification about ghosts on my watch. So.
Oh, that's wild.
Now, there is one really creepy story involving what guests call the Shadow Man. One visitor was walking upstairs late at night and saw what they assumed was another guest by seeing a dark figure moving down the hallway ahead of them. Nothing really dramatic, just someone walking. Totally normal, until they turned the corner and no one was there. There was no door closing, no footsteps, no explanation, just an empty hallway. Now, that'll make you lose some sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you believe that there is another human person in front of you and you catch up to them to go around the turn and there's no one there, that's when you hit that realization wall and you're like, oh, Lord, what was that? You know, it's one of those things that kind of makes your butthole pucker. You know, you're what did I just see? You know, it's like, you do that little wait a minute thing. You know, it's like, because I've done it here. I did it in the house that I grew up. You're like, oh, what's that? Uh-oh. So let's move on to one of the sadder stories that's tied to the house. And this is a woman named Inez Lloyd. Now, according to legend, Inez was left at the altar. She was the jilted bride. And depending on which version of the story you hear, she either jumped or fell from a third floor window, which again, that reinforces the belief that no one should ever go to the third floor of this place.
Right.
Nothing good seems to happen up there. After her death, people began reporting strange occurrences tied to her spirit. Most notably, piano music playing when no one was near the piano. Now, she needs to pair up with Harry. And and they can, if they find one more ghostly musician, well, they've got a trio, and the admission cost is going to go up. Okay? You know, if we have ghostly concerts each night.
Right.
You know, look, it's dinner and a show. Come on. Well, you know, that's extra, you know. I mean, not going to tip my ghostly trio, though. What do you tip a ghost with?
Yeah, I don't know. Advice?
Yeah.
I don't know.
But, crossover.
Yeah. See that light? Looks like a train light?
Yeah.
Go to it.
Yeah, go check it out.
It would be a little weird, though, if you're sitting there eating dinner and there is music. There's like a quartet instrumentation happening and the stage is empty.
Yeah.
You're watching an empty stage going, are you playing a CD?
Yeah.
No. Okay.
But just, I mean, think, you know, it's quiet, you know, you're trying to kind of relax and take in all the atmosphere and a piano starts playing. That's something that you don't ignore.
Yeah.
It's something that you decide, okay. Something's going on. It's kind of like Harry's violin. You think there's either a guest that has really bad timing or they've got one of those player pianos. And then you realize neither one is true. Okay.
Right. That's the problem when you find out neither one is true.
This one to me is not quite as creepy because at least they have a piano. There's nothing I found that there's actually a violin in the house at all.
Right.
So at least there's already a piano there. And you can think.
You can pass it off somehow.
Is this the ghost bride? Is this Inez Lloyd? Or is there someone else in the house? And somehow ghost bride kind of feels like that's the better option. I don't know. But the piano thing, we've heard multiple stories of piano. I don't know why pianos seem to draw the spiritual musician out in some of these ghosts, but
it's probably easier.
Maybe. I don't know why, but maybe it would be.
maybe just poking rather than like you had to pick something up and.
I guess, yeah. Yeah, it makes sense. It's there. I mean, you know, pianos aren't something you can necessarily hide. You don't stick it in the closet. You know, right. It's a piece of furniture. I mean, it's a display piece. So it's out there. It's front and center. You know, people notice it. So, I mean, I have had friends that can't walk past a piano without sitting down and messing with it. Yeah. And I always thought, man, I wish I knew how to play the piano. But then I was like, then I'd be that annoying guy that just can't walk by a piano.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You don't do that. You don't walk past somebody else's guitar and pick it up and start plucking away on it.
No, for two reasons. One, I don't want to be that annoying guy. Because I lived in Nashville for so long, and there was so many of those annoying guys that just, you're stopping to get a Starbucks, and three people are sitting around Starbucks playing a guitar for some girl.
Right, right, right.
And you're like, dude, stop it. Stop it.
Yeah.
You go to a party just supposed to be hanging out, and some jack wagon shows up with an acoustic guitar and starts trying to get everybody to sing along with him.
Or not even. They pick up the owner of the house's guitar and start playing someone else's guitar.
And that brings me to my second reason, is because you come in my house and just pick up my guitar without asking, you're getting a boot in your crack and you're leaving. You don't pick up a man's guitar without asking.
That's right.
It's the same thing. You don't put on a man's hat without asking.
Oh, no, never.
Don't just pick up my hat and put it on your head. It ain't funny. You're not a kid.
Yeah, I don't want lice. You know,
if you're six, then we're like, oh, ha, ha, cute.
Yeah, like, give me my hat.
If you're 36, I go, ha, ha, get out of my house.
Now, this next spirit adds a little bit different kind of haunting. It's a woman named Sally Boston. And she was believed to have been one of the enslaved individuals on the plantation. Her presence is most often connected to one very specific thing, the smell of food cooking. Now, haunted scents, the scent of a ghost, are weirdly common. And the scent is tied to memory. You know, they have done neurological studies that say odors and fragrances are much more closely tied to the memory than even, you know, your eyesight is.
Right.
So cooking, perfume, smoke, anything that would linger. We have talked about ever since we've done this show. Being associated with hauntings, and Lloyd Hall has got that as well. Guests have described suddenly walking through the house and smelling biscuits baking or a full meal cooking.
That's the kind of ghost smell I want. I love biscuits.
I knew this is what I told him. I was like, you're going to love this. Yeah.
I love it.
But the kitchen is completely empty.
That's fine.
Yeah, right. I just like the smell.
At this point, that's fine. I'll overlook the fact that it's a ghost doing it. If you're making biscuits, daddy coming. I'm just saying.
One visitor reportedly followed the smell, expecting breakfast to already be underway, and found no one there. But if ghost biscuits are being made, I've got questions. Mostly, are they any good?
Right.
You know,
right.
Because, man, I'll tear up a biscuit. I'm like Adam.
Are they,
you know,
pre-buttered?
Yeah, right.
Or do I have to put butter on them?
I mean, I'm not saying that I would stay in a place that had haunted biscuits, but I might risk it if they're really, really good, you know?
Yeah.
Now,
I would get myself sick because I wouldn't care. I'd just be like, biscuit. I'd turn into Homer Simpson and just give me that biscuit.
That's right. Yeah. But they're amazing. I mean, the next thing would be if you had a ghost that cooked bacon and one that cooked chocolate chip cookies.
Oh, yeah.
Now, yep. You know, you put the three of them in there with the ghostly trio playing the music. This would be the greatest haunted experience ever. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Maybe some cheese grits too. That would be good, but you know,
but
don't want to push it. Just we'll stick with the bacon, biscuits and cookies.
That's right. But, that's right. Nothing else. Just, yeah. But this place has got to have at least one more tragic backstory. So there's also the legend of the poison nanny, which I mentioned at the top of the show.
Yeah.
Details on this one are a little fuzzy, but the story persists that a caretaker on the property was intentionally poisoned, and her spirit is said to still linger.
Is mad about it. I believe it.
Yeah. Now, whether it's a separate spirit entirely or one of the many unnamed female apparitions people report seeing, no one is completely sure.
One of the many?
Yeah. Which that's totally on brand for these haunted plantations.
Yeah. Yeah.
The ghost census is never completely organized. Okay.
Right. Right.
So, but there is a legend that a caretaker was poisoned. They just aren't 100% sure which of the female ghosts on the plantation is the one that was poisoned.
Because that's true.
You know, they're not saying, and I guess that's kind of hard to discern from just the apparition. So,
now, do they have a smell? Can you tell by their perfume or something which one it was?
So beyond all the named spirits, there's a lot of general activity reported throughout the house. And visitors talk about doors opening and closing, footsteps in empty rooms, voices when no one else is there, objects moving, feeling like you're watched, shadow figures passing through rooms. All of the usual haunted fare is there, okay? Mm. But one of the creepiest parts is the longtime staff seem completely unfazed by this, which kind of tells you it is so common that they have just gotten used to it.
It's like when you have an old AC unit, like a window unit, and every time it clicks on, it makes a bang. Mm-hmm. Well, if you live there, you're used to the and then start going. Yeah,
we had an old one that did that.
Yeah. Visitors are like, what in the?
Right.
And like duck, thinking they're getting shot.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing. These employees have dealt with the hauntings so frequently that they don't even bat an eye.
That's it. You say something about it to the staff, and the response is, oh, yeah, that happens.
Yeah, so, I mean, what you gonna do about it?
And, you know, and that's part of it, too, because they're not trying to convince anyone. They've just accepted that this place is haunted. And these ghosts just do their thing. Harry plays the violin. Inez plays the piano. Sally's in there cooking biscuits. Just deal with it. This is the way it works here. You know, they've all just come to accept it.
We've got our ecosystem. Just let it be.
And to me, that's creepier because people go stay at places just praying. Please let something happen to me. I want to go back and tell somebody that I stayed at a haunted hotel or a haunted plantation or a haunted whatever pool hall and something weird happened. I want to have that story. If you are that person, go stay here because it apparently happens so often. The staff doesn't even bat an eye. They don't even really talk about it. They just tell you, oh, yeah, that happens every Thursday. What?
Yep. Nobody here plays violin, and then they just go on.
But why is it so haunted? Why is this one so haunted? Well, when you think about it from like a paranormal theory, it really checks all the boxes. You've got violent death, emotional trauma, betrayal, possible burial grounds, repetition of daily life, which is one I don't ever really touch on, but this makes a lot of sense. The same things happening over and over and over. You know, farm life is pretty monotonous. You got to do it, because guess what? You're going to have to do it again tomorrow and the next day and the next day, or it's going to be out of control. Plus the fact that the structure, the house, is over 200 years old, and the age of these homes really plays into being haunted. And that is a perfect storm. You stack all of that on top of each other, and you just don't get haunting. You get layers, like when we talked about Santa Fe. Layers upon layers upon layers. It's residual energy and intelligent hauntings. You know, repeated trauma and maybe things that were even darker that aren't mentioned in these legends. It's not one ghost. It's like a whole ghost family. So, would you stay there, Adam? Would you go? I kind of think you would, know, and I think Ashley would book it.
Yeah, we probably would. Part of me, there's a part in me that says no, because there is so much that happens that I don't like my sleep being interrupted. Like, that's a big thing for me.
Yeah.
And it seems like this is a sleep interrupting violin ghost. However, if they make it up to me by cooking biscuits, I might be okay with it.
I think if I had the opportunity, I would, just to get the experience.
Right.
I would not be happy if I was just going, hey, there's a plantation in Louisiana that you can stay at. It's a bed and breakfast. Would you like to go? And me and Amanda go. And then turns out we learn that it's haunted as all get out. I would not dig that. If I'm going for that experience, I think I would totally do it.
Yeah. And at this point in my life, Matt, if I'm being perfectly honest, I'm not going on ghost hunts to hunt ghosts and all that stuff, but I like staying at those places for an experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's all it is now at this point in my life, is I would like to stay at this place and just experience it. But I'm not actively like seeking out a ghost hunt kind of thing.
Right. But I think it would be cool to book a room there and walk around the halls and to maybe hear Harry's violin or to smell some ghost biscuits.
I don't want
to feel anyone breathing on my neck.
No.
Okay.
No.
Hard pass on
no
that.
No thanks.
But if you're brave, if you're curious, or the people that hear Haunted Plantation and they think, hey, romantic weekend getaway, this is probably the place. Maybe don't stay on the third floor. And if you hear music in the middle of the night, don't go chasing it down. This is how horror movies are filmed, you know?
Right.
Like, yeah, what?
Get a room near
the
kitchen.
Let's go see what that is. No, just stay put. Yep. Enjoy the song. It will stop in a few minutes. Okay.
And again, don't chase it down either if you hear banjos, because that's not a ghost.
Never, never.
That's a human.
Never chase banjo music.
No.
But what do you guys think? Let us know. Is Lloyd Hall, is it as haunted as they say it is? It doesn't sound like they're really marketing this. It markets itself, you know? So if you've been around that Cheneyville, Louisiana, you've probably heard the stories about Lloyd Hall. I know you've heard them about Myrtle's Plantation, but I mean, Lloyd Hall sounds just as haunted, maybe not, maybe a little more.
I was gonna say it might be a little more than Myrtle.
Yeah, let us know. And the best place to do that is in our Facebook group. It is thousands of people just sharing experiences, talking about episodes of the show, telling dad jokes. It's just a really fun, safe place, you know, to talk about all these wild stories that we all love to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget to check out our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com. And there you can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. You can listen to the show and you can become a patron. And don't forget our second show, Side Quest. I promise you, it is a lot of fun. If you haven't taken a chance on it yet, go for it. Adam's pointing at the QR code. It'll take you right there.
I think I got it.
It's a heck of a lot of fun, and we're going to be doing a great one tonight. So until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.